What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in, as always. This is a friendly reminder that I'm going to start throwing in at the beginning of these that I don't care if you fast forward through this part. I talk about myself and my life for about 15 to 20 minutes right now, and the way to scroll through or scrub through is to fast forward and listen when you hear a beat. There's an 8-bar beat. That's when you know the podcast and the interview is about to start. So you can skip this part if you want. Because I'm tired of you motherfuckers on YouTube talking shit. I'm tired of y'all motherfuckers talking shit. I'm also, you know what? I'm a little sad that you other motherfuckers that do listen don't come in and defend your boy. You need to defend little Lee at all costs. Team Kinda Neat. Team KN. Hashtag that shit. No, I'm just kidding. Don't hashtag it. That's the end of that rant. I get it. You guys that listen to this on YouTube are tourists. You are podcast tourists, and that's fine. But, you know, let me do my thing. Oh, don't forget that you can go to patreon.com/kindaneat and donate or pledge a dollar per episode to keep the lights on around here at the Cosmic Zoo. We just got a new SSL. Shout out to Daddy Kev. The zoo is looking so beautiful. It can, if you guys are ever in Los Angeles, we can take care of all your recording needs and necessities. It is a fully operational and functional, beautiful studio. So yeah, last week, like I mentioned, was my birthday, turned 35. Shout out to being 35, officially 100% mid-30s. Fuck, man, that's crazy. I'm so old. Oh my God. But I had a really dope birthday week because, as you guys know from the tight 10 that I did about tacos on the K-Flay episode, I love food. I love eating so much. I just love food. And there are so many fucking restaurants that I've wanted to eat at in LA, and I don't really get to eat like nice fancy food that frequently because a lot of the time I'm just like, you know, alone. I'm alone. So, oh my God, I'm so alone all the time. No, but I'm usually like just alone and go eat by myself. But for my birthday week, I have mad different friends that met up with me for birthday dinners, and so I got to eat at Animal, which was great. I ate at Animal. Shout out to Avocado and my homie Celine, who actually gets brought up in this episode as well. They went to Animal with me, and it was delightful. I ate at a place called Cannibal, which is a new spot in Culver City. Great vegetables. I don't know, like the mains didn't really do it for me, maybe, but I liked their veggies and salads very, very much. Cannibal in Culver City. I also told you guys about Cannibal already because they opened a deli that I thought was overpriced. So this was actually the restaurant, not the deli part. And then I went to Ink, which was like one of the best meals I've ever had in my life. I've been debating on whether or not I should talk about the entire meal dish by dish as an intro, but I think that I just right now decided against it. Let me just say that, like, shout out Michael Voltaggio. I'm a Top Chef motherfucking fanatic. The season that he won on Top Chef was the most competitive season with, I think, not even arguably, but like objectively, the biggest talent pool on Top Chef was the season that he won. And so when he won that season, he opened up Inc. on Melrose, but like the more, you know, the more like hoity-toity side of Melrose, like the Beverly Hills side of Melrose. And man, what a fucking great meal. What a great menu. What a good staff. If this gets back to you, if the fact that I'm like plugging your restaurant this hard on a podcast that got like at least 100 people that listen to it, if it gets back to you, Michael Voltaggio, just email me, bro. Give me a free meal. I'll eat there again. No worries. I'll eat there again. It was fucking amazing. If you guys ever like have some money and a occasion, go eat at Ink. And then on the on my actual official birthday, I thought I was supposed to be out working on a job, but it got canceled. So I was in LA on my actual birthday of the 8th, and I ate at Broken Spanish, which is delightful gourmet Mexican food, like high-end gourmet Mexican food, which I guess some people would say that sounds like an oxymoron. I generally would say that too, like because I prefer, like, you heard my tight 10 about tacos. I like that shit gutter. I like it from the streets, from a taco truck. But I will say that this is like Broken Spanish downtown, also an amazing meal. Yeah, so I got to eat a lot of good food this week, and it was really heavenly for me because, like I said, I love food. But don't ever call me a foodie because I think that shit is stupid as fuck. I hate the word foodie, and I hate people that call themselves foodies. And my whole thing is I'm just like an obese person hidden in a mildly in shapes person's body. And that's why I like food. Not because I'm like, oh, tell me about these organic ingredients. Tell me about this farm to table experience that I'm eating. No, I just like shit to taste good. This week on the show, we have my friend Rebecca Haythcote, who is a music journalist. And as you guys know, I compartmentalize a lot of these episodes into like either it's a musician or it's somebody in the music industry who can also inspire people who might not necessarily be musicians but know they love music and make you feel like it is possible to survive doing things in the music industry that are not necessarily music. And so I've had another music journalist, Jeff Weiss, on the show, and Rebecca is another prominent Los Angeles music journalist who I just so happened to meet like pretty much right when she got to LA. We just crossed paths and like the scene that was going on back then, and somebody was like, oh yeah, Rebecca, you gotta meet Rebecca, she's a good writer. And somebody's like, oh, you gotta meet Lee, he's loud and he's the asshole. That shit is accurate. And so we met, and then she ended up, like, when I was trying to figure out how to like be my own manager and make shit pop, I was like, you know what I need? I need a legit bio. And I was like, invited her. I was like, look, Rebecca, I know you're a writer, and I know, and you know, I need somebody to like write me a bio, and I want it to be like official, you know? And she's like, yeah, cool, let's like meet up and just talk over coffee. And we went to this place called The Bright Spot, and we talked about this in the podcast too, but I'm just like reiterating the story. And she just let me like talk her fucking ear off for 2 hours straight. And I left going like, wow, this is like the best I've ever felt. I was like, this is like the best date that I've ever had that wasn't a date. Like, I wish that a date went like this, even though I know that, you know, I'm like hiring you to write a bio. And anyway, she turned the conversation into a bio, and I was such an asshole at the time. I mean, I just make mistakes. I make so many mistakes in my life. And I, you know, we talk again about leading with yes in this episode. And I read her the bio that she wrote, and I didn't lead with yes because I was like, wow, this is like so well written, but it seems like an article. It doesn't seem like a bio. It seems like an actual, I was like, yo, can you like get this published somewhere? I was like, can you like give this to a publication? And so I ended up just writing some shitty bio for myself of like, Lee was born in Alaska. But yeah, she's such a talented writer and such a nice person and so disarming. And you'll see, even in this conversation, like she has this way of conversing with people where she'll say something and make a definitive statement, and then she gives you the convo eyes of like, all right, it's your turn to talk. And you'll hear me, I just like start fucking talking and I can't stop because she's just good at that. And so all of her interviews that she does, she's been published in LA Weekly, LA Times, Pitchfork, Billboard, Spin, Fader, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. She's like in all the major publications. Her interviews are great and they're talkative and they're conversational. And so she's someone to look out for. She's a trusted voice in the rap world for me personally because I know her and I know her tastes, and I do think she's a great writer. So keep your eyes peeled for Rebecca Haythcote articles because I think she's super talented. And this is my convo with Rebecca. I saw that you just went home recently, right?
I did.
Where is home?
Tennessee.
Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Tennessee. That's one of my first rap albums, Arrested Development. What part of Tennessee?
It actually, speaking of Arrested Development, they actually name check a town really close to me, past Dyersburg and into Ripley. Those are, but I'm in West Tennessee, like an hour east of Memphis.
Uh-huh.
This like tiny town, like less than 8,000 people or something.
Really?
Yeah, it's really small.
What's it called?
It's called Henderson.
Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, shout out Henderson, Tennessee.
Yeah.
How did you guys end up in Henderson, Tennessee? Or you just have like generations upon generations of folks that are from the U.S.?
No. My parents, my dad's a pharmacist, and so he moved there to, like, you know, own his own pharmacy.
People addicted to opioids? Opioids?
That's a very interesting point. My dad has great stories.
About what? Like, about fiends coming in?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, which is practically everybody now.
It is. It's a real epidemic. There are a lot of bad things happening in the country that I feel like you're on top of and that we'll cover. The opioid addiction might be the first one that we're on top of. No. So wait, where is he from then if he moved to Henderson, Tennessee?
He was from the east side of the – like middle side of the – middle Tennessee.
Okay.
My mom was from West Tennessee. They met at college.
So they're still Tennessee.
College sweethearts.
Yeah, Tennesseans though. And so your grandparents are from Tennessee.
Yep.
Are their grandparents from Tennessee?
Yep.
So
wow. I'm really
You got roots here.
I bleed Tennessee.
You have roots in America for sure.
Yeah.
What is Henderson, Tennessee like?
It's just, I mean, we lived in the quote city.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's rural. It's like country. When I sit on the front porch in the morning, there's no noise. When I sit on the front porch at night, there's cicadas. That's it.
Not crickets. What's a cicada?
Cicadas are the ones that sound like, that does not really come off.
I didn't know you were such an impersonator. I didn't know you had like.
That did not come out the same way.
Right. Cicadas sound very sexual.
Cicadas sound like panting. Yeah, so that's what it's like. It's like super rural. I mean, not many people. Everybody pretty much knows everybody.
Do you live in like a Forrest Gump looking house? Is it like a big white house with two stories and columns out front?
No, I do not.
When you say rural, like, is there farmland?
Yeah, there are farms.
But you're not from a farm.
I'm not from a farm. Because my dad was a pharmacist.
Is it like a cul-de-sac? Are you from a cul-de-sac?
Yes, I do live on a cul-de-sac.
Okay.
But like the things you're talking about, like the big white houses with the, you know, the big columns and the sort of, you know, sycamore.
I was basically picturing a plantation in my head.
I was going to say go deeper. Go to Mississippi. That's where you need to go.
I don't really know that much about the South. I don't know a lot of people from the South in general, particularly in Los Angeles. What is the difference between Tennessee and Mississippi or like Tennessee and Georgia or something like that?
I mean, everybody's Southern, but the accents are really different. Like you can really tell accents from, you know, from Kentucky to Tennessee to Alabama to Mississippi. And then you've, of course, in Mississippi and Memphis, you've got the river. So you've got the Delta down in Mississippi. You got river folks.
What's a river folk?
Well, it's just a particular kind of person, like who's been raised on the river, the same way as a person who's been raised on the farm is different. You know,
I mean, I feel like if you're raised on the LA River, you probably got some probably very different from the Delta.
Very different from the Delta.
Yeah, right.
But you know, I love going back there because when I was growing up there, I just wrote an essay about this actually, about Hayton. Where I lived, you know, because it was so quiet, it was so still, and you know, when we were kids, there was no internet.
Right.
I mean, we had video games, but
speak for yourself. I'm only 22.
That's right. No, I'm sorry. Sorry, you're just out of.
I just turned 35.
So we're like a part of a generation that didn't have that stuff.
Right.
So it was like go play, you know. So I mean. I feel like that's why we have imagination. I mean, I have a vivid imagination because I had to play by myself all the time.
It's so crazy how much you sound like you hate millennials right now.
I do.
You just hate millennials. You're like, fuck this Pokemon Go shit.
I don't have Pokemon Go.
Me neither. But I mean, I feel like you mispronounced it. It's Pokemon.
I definitely did.
No, I'm just kidding.
I definitely did.
Wait, so. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I grew up in a rural area as well, and there was a lot of having to, like, go out and play and do stuff. But at the same time, I was also, like, a complete cable addict and, like, grew up worshiping MTV. And yeah, you know what I mean? Like, sitcoms, 100%. Thursdays on NBC, Seinfeld and all that shit. Like, you're a writer now.
Yeah.
That's why you're here. You are a writer, and you write for many of my favorite publications, and you're doing great. And... You also have a very distinct taste of like music that you appreciate. Where did this taste begin in your childhood? Was it early on that you picked up on like rap music?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the first things I remember loving were Prince. I knew the words to like Little Red Corvette.
Uh-huh.
And I loved Chaka Khan and
Chaka Khan going into rehab for pills.
Yeah, exactly. Fentanyl.
It was a fentanyl?
Yeah.
That's like so really worse. Scary.
Yeah. But yeah, it was like early on, I don't know what it was. We had MTV when I was a kid from ever, you know, and I loved videos. I loved all the sort of, I mean, I love Madonna because it was the 80s, you know, and Sheila E. and Prince. And the rap was my older brother, though.
Like, oh, okay.
I just remember we would be on the bus, and I don't know where it started for him, but he would have, like, tapes. And our bus driver was, like, the cool bus driver, and he would let us play tapes.
He was, like, Otto from The Simpsons.
He was so cool. We rode the cool bus. Right. It was, like, a thing back then.
Right. Like, you thought it was a cool bus, and now you look back, and you're like, why was it so short? That's terrible dad
That's joke. Why it was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he would, like, rap. My older brother would, like, you know, be on the bus with his buds.
And
like,
knew
rapping.
The lyrics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my mom and dad were just innocent, I guess.
Yeah.
They let us listen to whatever we wanted to.
You just got one older brother? Is that your only sibling?
One younger and one older.
One younger. Oh, so you're the middle.
Middle girl.
And the gal. Yeah. Well, what'd mom do?
She was a homemaker. She stayed home with us.
Traditional Southern mama. Yep. Mm-hmm. Right. And
she was really good at it.
We had
fresh sheets every other day.
Wow. And like iced tea and lemonade all the time and stuff or what?
She wasn't so much of a cook. Oh. She didn't love that.
She's not a cook?
Mm-mm.
I picture a Southern mother being so good at cooking.
I'm the cook.
Where'd you learn to cook
from? Chops. I just learned myself. Probably because my mom didn't like it.
Did you live close to any of your grandparents though?
No, a couple hours.
So you guys were rural, and you were on your own like familial unit where like you didn't have it wasn't a bunch of cousins around and stuff like that.
No,
no.
But we had a tight family.
Yeah,
but it was they lived an hour and a half away.
Uh huh. And so your older brother gets into rap. Did he influence both you and your younger brother? Was he like he was like a cool older brother?
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
I'm sure he did. I mean, but my little brother is one who introduced me to 666. I mean, my little brother was rolling around like hard.
Right.
My older brother was too.
What's the age difference?
4 years between all of us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was pretty funny. We all were like super heavy into rap.
Really?
Yeah.
And so you're so close to Memphis, you brought up 666 immediately. Like you guys must have been on it when it was like a local level.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My younger brother, I recently asked him, like, what did he like? What was his favorite, like, 666, like, tape? And he named some completely obscure mixtape.
Right.
We were just, like, really fortunate to be, like, there and get that. That's the rap, one of the rap stations we could pick up in the car.
How far were you guys from Memphis?
70 miles.
Oh, so like an hour drive. Would you guys drive into Memphis when you were kids?
No. We did, with our mom. Our mom would take shopping there and whatever. Right. But so it was like the big city.
When you're in high school, you couldn't just drive there for like, I'm 17 now. I'm going to go party in Memphis. None of that?
No.
That you'll admit? No, I'm just kidding.
I did after a while.
Right.
We would go because there was like a club there.
Right,
you know. Everybody wanted to go to a club.
Well, so sociologically, what's Henderson like? Is it middle class? Was it diverse?
Diverse. I mean, it was black and white.
Yeah. And was it pretty segregated in that sense where it's like the wrong side of the tracks, quote unquote?
No, not really.
Okay.
It wasn't big enough to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, people would live out in the country.
Right.
Or people lived in town, but it wasn't really, like, separated. Like, in high school, I mean, it was all together.
Right.
It just – and maybe that's one – I mean, I feel like that was influential on me. Because I definitely saw – there were black dudes who were cowboys, you know?
Oh, wow.
Like, rocking – like, way more than I ever did. Like,
right.
I didn't listen to country music. I didn't care. I did not want anything to do with it.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there were, like, black dudes rocking Wranglers and cowboy hats. So it was weird like that.
You know, you and I, we text on and off about writing stuff and articles. And one of my main bones to pick with like music journalism in general now is that people are so – it's always like these young – it's young white dudes that are like hipsters kind of discovering rap and speaking with this hubris that they like know about rap, you know, or that they understand – the culture or whatever, yeah. and they feel the right to critique it. But one of the things I've always found interesting about you and what I pick up from your writing is that, like, you're not like a hipster fucking rap lover. Like, you're not somebody that's going out to seek some you're not looking to seek people that are reinventing the wheel. Like, you truly just love black music, like, from a genuine place, and I can tell that you've grown up around it, and it's not some, like, self-discovery you're going through when you're writing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You like rappers that a lot of hipsters don't like. You know what I mean? People that they, oh, that's so mainstream or something. Like, you fuck with that shit, and that's tight to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, so I forget where I was going when I started that rant, but it's more like, it seems like you had a genuine experience with black culture as a kid or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I was just always immersed in that music. I mean, you're right. You know, I just, that's what I like to listen to since I can remember being, you know, 5 or 6 years old.
Right.
So I think that's true. But I think the other thing is, you know, as a writer, I mean, I've always been a reader, like, voracious reader. Mm. And I think the thing is I'm not interested in talking about myself. Mm-hmm. I really want to, like, help tell other people's stories. Mm-hmm. And that sounds a little cliched, but that's how I approach it, you know? So I never try, I don't want to approach it as I'm this expert and I, you know, I love it. And so why would I not want to tell stories about it? Mm-hmm. You know, that's just what I like to listen to. And mm-hmm. I don't want to critique it as much either. You know, of course I write reviews, everybody does, but for me, what is my favorite, you know, I love to write profiles and features and mm-hmm. really get inside, you know, the head of people who are making the music I love.
Right. Well, and it's just from a curation standpoint of the things that you write about, I always notice that you're more off the beaten path of, like, what the standard music journalist, if everybody's trying to cover Frank Ocean, you would be talking about The Dream or Solange or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or, like, or Miguel. Or if everyone's talking about, I don't know, Young Thug or whomever, it's like you're doing YG.
Yeah.
You're like, you know what I mean? And it's just like these, I don't know. It's like, and then they blow up later. You know what I mean? Like, I feel, okay, this is going to sound maybe bogus coming out of a white dude's mouth, but I feel like you're up on artists that, like, white people are late on. Right?
Well, I mean, that's a compliment.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I think YG's a good point. When I first moved here in 2009,
right,
that was the first local rapper I, like, attached to.
From the spliff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that song Pussy Killer that he had. And so the minute I heard that, I was like, who is this dude? And when I hear one thing, I'm just, like, checking for that person always.
Right.
I did that with Schoolboy Q.
Right.
The same way, you know. He came up to me, like, this rangy kid, and was just like, you should, like, watch out for me. And I don't know why I did, but I did. And next thing I know, Setbacks is out. And I was like, okay, he's right.
Right,
like,
it's tight.
But, yeah, I mean, maybe it is. It's just what I like. And so if I like it, I'm just going to keep an eye on it. But it's hard for me to force myself into, like, oh, here's somebody new that everybody's trying to talk about. Well, I should be on it, too.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I'm not going to force myself.
I think that's one of the things I appreciate about your writing is that it does never seem like you're, like, writing for clicks. Or maybe sometimes you are. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But
no.
Like, yeah.
Well, I try not to.
Right.
I mean, yeah, that would be.
You write about things you genuinely care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, that's what makes it – otherwise, why would I do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's pretty – I mean, you're in a creative profession.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do it for the money. You're not doing it because, you know, you're getting rich and famous off of it. You do it because there's a piece that you can really pour your heart into. And, you know, for me recently, I did that on a YG profile.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just – I cared about that story so much because, I just wanted – I wanted him to get, because I feel like he's put, like, blood, sweat, and tears in his career, and, you know, I mean, it's
literally
fascinating.
Literally blood, you know.
Literally.
Picking back me and Bull.
Yeah.
Bull, Bomb, and Belective. Sorry. Continue, though. You wanted, he put the blood, sweat, and tears, and you wanted to, like, do his story justice?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I feel a responsibility to do somebody's story justice.
Right.
That's what keeps me, that's why I take, I mean, I'm, you know, kill myself over pieces sometimes because I just don't you know, they put so much work into this, and then you're just going to write some, you know, hacky piece. Like, right. No. I mean, I was inspired by rappers my whole life, the way how colorful, you know, their imagery was. And that's a huge influence on me, as much as any fiction writer, you know?
One of the other things that I've always, like, really appreciated about your writing is how kind of seemingly self-aware you are of the fact that you are a guest to the culture and you don't have necessarily a right to it, or you don't have an ownership over it.
Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite tweets that I read of yours was something about how you're only interested in reading articles that have been written by women of color lately, right?
Yeah.
And I love that too, because it's like I said, I have a problem with a lot of like white male music journalists that cover rap music, because I don't think that they like have any certain understanding or then they didn't grow up in it or something. Particularly if you're like under the age of 25, there's something so like weird about writing about black culture to me, particularly critiquing it. So tell me about that sensitive area of being like a white woman covering rap music. Like, how do you walk the line of like knowing your role in this culture?
Well, I think a lot of times maybe my appearance is a little disarming, because I know sometimes people do not think I'm here to do the rap interview, you know, because like you said, I dress the way I dress. I'm a Southern girl, and you can definitely tell that, I think. I had this friend a couple years ago who, when he first met me, was like, I told him what I did after we had hung out a couple times, and he was like, wait, what? He's like, I thought you were like a little housewife listening to country music. So I think I come off that way.
Right.
And I think that helped. I think that people recognize in me that I'm not trying to be like all down and shit, you know?
Right.
I think they think she is coming here, she is who she is, and she's listening to me and she's respecting me. And there's a mutual respect, I hope. I feel like, you know, that I have that with people I interview.
Right.
But I have a problem sometimes when I see certain people, you know, who try to go in and just, you know, the whole like, yes, queen and all that stuff from certain people, it bothers me. I'm like,
right.
That's not, why, what are you doing? It comes off to me as disingenuous, you know?
Like kind of a weird code switching that almost seems like a mockery in a sense? Or
you know,
what?
Yeah, and I don't think it's intentional.
Yeah.
But to me, it comes off as like, you're being disrespectful to me, you know?
Right.
You're putting on in front of people that you wouldn't do this if you were
in a different environment.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's weird to me.
Yeah. Well, that brings up an interesting – the initial thing you said about your appearance being disarming and your Southern charm being disarming. Has it been over the years difficult – as a woman being taken seriously? Like, I remember back, one of the first times you and I ever spoke, I was trying to find somebody to write a bio for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we
mm-hmm.
met at a diner, and we had coffee, and we talked for like, I talked forever because I never shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
and,
the bright spot.
Right,
yeah,
at the bright spot, right. And so I was like, when we were done, you're like, yeah, I think I have like obviously way more than enough. And I was like, yo, this was amazing. This was like the best date I've ever been on, because all you did was let me talk the whole time and I didn't have to like worry about anything. And it was disarming. But now I look back and I go, oh, I shouldn't have said that way, because that's like fucking sexist and misogynist or whatever. So do you get people mistaking you for like, oh, you're back here because you like want to fuck rappers or something? Like, do
yeah.
you get that kind of shit?
Yeah, for yeah. sure.
Right.
Not usually. Well, I don't know. Maybe from rappers. But I mean, they're definitely. I had a time at El Rey.
Yeah.
I was doing an interview and I got there and I just showed up like I showed up.
Yeah.
And the bouncer wouldn't let me back there, because he thought that's what I was doing. He did not believe me that I was there to like do an interview.
Right.
So yeah, I think that probably is the impression that a lot of people get. So it's always, you know, a moment of victory for me when afterwards, if people have been listening into the interview, you know, they kind of have this new appreciation for me and newfound respect that I'm not there to like have sex. I'm there to like do a job. And
right.
Yeah. So That's a nice feeling.
Is it a sexist industry that you're in? Like, do you feel it from people?
I mean, not really. Yeah. But then again, I'm from the South.
Right.
So I'm used to being called darling, baby, honey. That's what
all
I call
all the things I call you in, all,
yes,
in our emails.
Exactly. Yeah,
right.
I mean, that's the way I talk to people too.
Right.
You know, but so I may not be the best judge
okay.
of that.
Yeah.
Because to me, I like it when somebody's all automatically calling me honey or right. darling. And some other women would be like, fuck you, you know? But like me, I'm just like, oh, it's like home.
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's okay with me.
Okay. So take me back to childhood. Like, what were the things that you're – how did you find out about Prince? That struck me immediately. It's like, oh, you're into Prince. Like, how do you – who put you onto Prince?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. It had to be MTV.
Right.
Because we loved it, you okay. know? We watched it when we were kids. I just remember first grade, and that's when I first had seen any – like, you know, we were just, like, all into, like, MTV, you know? MTV Raps and – Yo MTV Raps and watching – just that was like the sleepover activity, you
right.
know, like when I had sleepovers, we watched MTV at uh-huh. night, you know, ate pizza and watched MTV and danced.
Right.
So that was like always an essential part of my childhood was music and dancing. I love to dance. Like that's like my favorite, you know,
right.
If I can just go to a show and not have to review it and just dance to like rap music, that's what I'd rather be doing, you
right.
know? But that's just what I always have done my whole life.
What was it about Prince? I have a confession. I've probably made it publicly before, but like I never really like latched on to Prince. Like it just never it never struck me that right yeah. way. You know what I mean? So what was it about him as a kid that like you
man.
Clicked to?
Well, first of all, I was inconsolable when he died.
Oh, I know.
I don't know if
our mutual friend Celine were like both.
Yeah.
I saw you guys going back for the. She was very beat up too.
Yeah, I cried like it was a member of my family.
Right.
Like, I was just broken up. A week later, I was on the phone with my little brother, and I started crying over it. And he was like, what's wrong with you, sis? I was like, I'm just, like, beat up over this Prince thing. I think it was a combination of, as a little girl, he looked the way I kind of wanted to look. Like, I loved his outfits. I loved his makeup. I loved his hair.
Right.
But he also, like, woke something up. Like, that was my first, like, sexual feelings.
I was going to say, like, as a little kid, as a young woman or as a little girl, really, you must have been like, what is this strange feeling? Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The first time I remember feeling that was watching the video for Kiss.
Uh-huh.
And there was one moment when he, like...
bends her over?
No, the girl's, like, dancing, yeah. and he walks up and he puts his hand on her belly, and I was like...
Oh, on her belly,
ooh.
Okay.
I, like... It, like, took my breath away. I was like, what is... going on.
Right.
And then I felt like a little dirty for it, but I had to see that video. That was one of the videos I would like lie in wait, waiting for it to come on.
Right. Before you could just YouTube shit.
Yeah, exactly.
We used to VHS videos. Did you VHS video?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Taped everything on VHS.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
well, the dirty part, you felt dirty. Did you grow up super religious?
We grew up in church.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to a Southern Baptist church my whole life.
What's that like? I grew up Catholic, yep. So my church was so boring.
You know? Yeah. Ours was more fun.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I did theater when I was a kid, too.
Uh-huh.
And I think that watching, you know, Baptist preachers is pretty good. Like, it's a performance.
Very
you know?
Theatrical, right?
Very theatrical. Lots of up and down voice raising.
Energy.
You know, pauses, energy. I mean, they're good preachers because, you know, that's what you go for.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, it's boring and scary sometimes because of lots of hell talk, and
right.
that was terrifying. So that part was not fun.
Yeah.
But that was like activity. You know, that was like the thing you did.
Right.
You went to church. That was a social activity.
Right. That's like where you would see friends at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we went 3 times a week, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, so did you go to Sunday school as well mm-hmm. and all that stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. What's the difference? Well, like with Catholic Church, we had like First Communion. You have all these like things, these milestones markers, that you have to reach in your piety and in your like belief system. And then when I was 13, you know, you get confirmed into the church, and that's when you're like an adult. And I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm not going to do that. Like, do you guys have milestones like that in Southern Baptist Church, or is it just kind of like
pretty much just getting baptized?
And you do that at an older age?
Well, it depends. It depends on when you get saved. So that's how it works. So when you decide to give your heart to Jesus, then you're saved.
Uh-huh.
Then as a symbol of your old self dying and renewal, a new self born again.
That's when you get put in the water.
That's when you get put in the water, cleansed.
Did you get saved?
So, yes, I
how
did.
How old were you? Do you remember
12.
It?
12. I think I was 12.
12?
Yeah.
What's that like
that
as
was
a
12 pretty, year old? Yeah. I mean, I will be honest, there's a lot of pressure in Southern Baptist churches.
I believe it.
It's a lot of like everybody's doing it. All of a sudden your friends are like dropping like into the water and you're like, oh shit. I mean, what's going on? Is God going to choose me? You know, am I going to get saved?
Yeah. So that's my question. I get, though, that's interesting. They said, is God going to choose me? Because like as a young Catholic, you would hear about these people praying and God talking to them. And like, and I'll go, I don't hear this guy talking to me. So was it like that for you? I don't know if I'm not trying to like dig deep into your religious or spirituality or whatever.
Yeah, no, I think that's what it is supposed to be, that you, in at least in Baptist churches, Southern Baptist, you're supposed to hear the call in your heart, and then you respond or you don't respond.
Right.
And the big worry is when you're Southern Baptist is that if you ignore the call, then he may not call again. So that's that was like a big, I remember sermons on that, was if you hear the call of Jesus and you don't answer, he may not call again.
Mm-hmm. Did you,
I think I
did,
just like,
did you hear the call or did you just feel the pressure?
Well, I felt the pressure, but then I did feel the call.
Yeah.
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 Is it like a big momentous event when you like, well, First Communion, you know, it's like your childhood prom. Like people go get their pictures taken, you get a nice outfit, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right.
Is it like that with getting saved?
No, not really.
Yeah, just in like the backyard.
I mean, I think it is now.
Yeah.
But then it was a very like, well, especially my family, they weren't real demonstrative. So it was very like, this is a private matter between you and God. This isn't about like everybody else. Which, you know, I mean, that should be how it is if you are a spiritual person.
Right.
It shouldn't be about like.
And was the church diverse as well?
No.
No?
No.
All white or more like?
It was mostly white.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is your family the type that talks about who they vote for, or are your parents secretive about who they vote for?
They are very secretive.
So are mine.
Yes.
Why is the last generation so secretive?
I was raised to never talk about
who you vote for. Yeah, me neither.
Yeah.
What is that?
I don't know. It was some, again, like some personal choice that you made and no one else needed to know about it.
Do you
weird,
ever,
right?
Yeah, it is. Do you talk to your parents these days about politics at all?
I did when
I think
I was
you're
home.
Pretty like openly political person, right? Like you talk.
No,
no?
I hate politics. Really.
Okay.
My older brother worked in Washington for years.
Really?
Like 10 years. Yeah.
Well, doing what? Lobbying or something?
Fundraising.
Mm-hmm. So lobbying, kind of.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. Yeah. Raising money. He's really good at it.
Really?
Yeah.
Salesman.
Very good at it. No, honestly, good at it.
Yeah.
Like, not sleazy. Like, genuinely seems to like really care. Like, he will close down any place he's at talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like he cares. He loves it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I did talk to my parents recently about it. But I don't like. I just hate it. I think it's also motivated by money.
Right.
I feel like the two parties. I mean, they've just got us in this traffic gridlock.
Well,
and we can't move.
I totally agree with that. But as far as like everything that's been going down in the country with race relations, and it's so cyclical because I feel like it really every 20 years it's like the reawakening of all the fucking racial scars that the country has left.
Yeah.
It happened hugely in the 60s and 70s. It happened again in the 90s. And now it's happening again right now. And I mean, with how we make our living, like I said, being guests in this culture, I feel like it is our kind of responsibility to speak out about Black Lives Matter movement and about anti-police brutality and stuff like that. Like, do you talk about that sort of stuff on Twitter?
I agree. My method is to retweet Black voices.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I feel like – you know what? What am I going to say that, you know,
that it's not our experience.
Yeah, this is not my experience. Right. I know I'm privileged.
Right.
You know, I mean, as a woman, that's the only thing I can identify as being in a position of feeling vulnerable right. against, you know, a man or, you know, some corrupt cop that wants to somehow do something to me. That's right. scary. But, yeah, so my method has been, you know, I read Twitter. Like when I was at home last week, the only thing I really was doing is scroll through Twitter at night and, you know, just trying to retweet, like, the other voices, people who knew the victims mm-hmm. who personally and who wanted to say, you know, put out the opposite. That's what I think is really important, is to say this wasn't just a mugshot, that here's this person in their job. Here's this person right. with his child. Here's right. this person. So I really wanted to help.
Like, one of the most important tweets of last week, I feel like, was when CNN was putting out, like, this man is wanted for questioning in the Dallas shootings.
Yeah.
And then that woman tweeted out, like, this is a video of him while the shootings were going on. Like, he's right behind us.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they got, like, you know, 40,000
so
retweets.
Scary.
And that's, like, what stopped him from getting fucking... possibly killed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like, shit like that is so important to retweet.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I mean,
it's terrifying because, you know, I just the escalation. But I mean, gosh, I watched, you know, that 30 for 30 on OJ.
Yeah, it was great.
So great. Yeah. And they showed, you remember, they showed the beating of Rodney King over and over. And,
right.
like, after the second time it came up, I had to turn away. I was, like, crying. I couldn't watch it. And I was like, man, I don't know how this country is not, like, just burned down.
Right.
Because so out fucking rageous.
Well, and now we're watching.
And we're watching it
people
again.
Get shot, though.
Yeah.
Like, Rodney King lived.
Right.
And the city got burned down. And we're watching people get shot every week.
Yeah.
It's horrifying and it's so disheartening and so fucking sad. Like, it's just fucked.
Yeah.
And it feels like it keeps happening and there's nothing – it feels so hopeless because of, like, just the history feels so – I don't know. It feels so overpowering or all-encompassing. Like, those scars, how can they be healed type of shit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that's it. We never have these, you know, open conversations, and this is why. You know, like you were saying, the scar tissue, I don't ever think it's gotten healed.
Right.
And so what we're dealing with is it rips open.
Right.
And, you know, seeing these, like, I keep seeing this James Baldwin quote, which I think is so good. And it was like, to be black in America is to be in a constant state of rage.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not for most black people,
right.
but I would not be, that would be my.
I wouldn't question that or doubt that at all.
I just watching it as a white person, I feel enraged.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
You know? What is wrong with you?
Right.
Like, what is wrong? I mean, no matter how unstable you are as a police officer, if you feel unstable, get transferred.
Right.
Like, stop policing communities that you don't have compassion for.
Right.
You know?
Well, I was reading, like, something about some Redditors, like, cracked open, or kind of, like, internet sleuths, basically, like, found out that one of the Dallas officers that was murdered had, like, a Iron Cross tattooed on his finger and a bunch of, like, white supremacy stuff on his Facebook and was, like, an pretty open, like, white supremacist.
Yeah.
And then just on the way here, driving on the freeway, I see a big-ass fucking raised truck with a giant Iron Cross on the back and, like, something that said, like, you may not think violence is the answer, but I know violence is the answer. Some shit like that, like, on a sticker with a skull. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm, like, driving next to a white supremacist right now. Like, ugh.
Well, and also, I mean, can you imagine the uproar if a black person had that on his truck?
Right, right.
Like, give me a fucking break, you
right.
know? Like, what it...
Yeah.
You know, that's just, like, out there, but, like, somewhat, you know... Yeah, it's crazy.
It's dark times, man.
Yeah.
It's dark.
But you're right, you know, that's part of it. We love the music from this culture, and...
Well, and I think to an extent... I never would in normal life refer to myself as an influencer, but you are an influencer. You're in major publications and people read what you write. And so I do think that, like, for people like you, there is a responsibility. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I would never call myself an influencer.
Right. Right. Neither. That's what I'm saying.
You know,
but
yeah.
Yeah. But you are. People listen to what you, people read your words, you know? So speaking of reading your words, when did you start writing? Were you always drawn to the English language as a child?
Yeah. I mean, I read all the time. I was like a bookworm, like constantly. I got in trouble in school because I'd pull my book out and read when the teacher like turned her back. So that was like a big part of my life. And I kept a journal.
You were like reading 50 Shades of Grey, though, which is like so inappropriate at that age.
Yeah. Prince and 50 Shades of Grey. There you go.
Just a voracious reader as a child.
Yeah. And then I kept a diary journal from second grade.
Every day or what?
Not every day, but like I wrote a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Like how many words would you do a night?
I mean, I would write like as many pages as I need to express myself, Lee.
Right.
As a third grader, I had many things to say to my Hello Kitty Dear Diary.
Oh, you had a Hello Kitty Dear Diary.
I did have a Hello Kitty Diary.
That's cute. That's funny. I got my first diary in third grade, too. And you know what I used to write in there?
What?
Raps.
Really?
Yeah, like, oh, man, summer's off, sitting by a pool. Wish I was at school. You like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I actually liked school as a kid, so I would write raps about how I wished I was back
really?
At school.
Really? Yeah. Why did you like school so much?
I like learning, man. And like I lived in the sticks, so like girls were at school.
Right, you know what I mean? Right.
Girls were not in my driveway in North Pole, which is where I was stuck most of the time as a third grader.
That's really true.
Yeah.
I remember when school was out, there was this sense of like, oh, I can't see my crush every day.
Right, it's boring. Like summer, like, yeah.
I looked forward to like, you know, fifth period or something like in high school because I had chorus and that was where my crush was.
Right, what
There's
did you
a reason to like, you know, be alive.
Right, totally. Like in the summer, all I had to look forward to was pretty much like sports.
Yeah, right. With a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, what would you do in the summers? Did you guys have like swimming holes?
We had, a country club.
Swag.
No, it wasn't that fancy like that. But no, we went to the pool.
Yeah.
If my mom would take us.
Right.
You know, if she wasn't too tired.
Yeah. So you say you were a drama kid too?
Yeah, I did theater.
Like what age did you start that? High school?
In junior high.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What plays did you, were you like a lead? Were you the lead actress in school?
I was a lead actress, yes.
Were you like a young Anna Kendrick?
For a long time I thought I was going to be an actress, yeah.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You have that kind of charming actress swag to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Did you do that in college? Did you stay in Tennessee for college?
No, I went to Mississippi.
To Mississippi.
Yeah.
People from the South, they only say one set of those S's.
You're right, we do.
You can tell people from
That's
the South because they
so
say
so funny. How would you say it?
Mississippi. But you guys say Mississippi. Mississippi. My best friend from back home, shout out Sean. He was born in Mississippi and moved to Alaska. And he would every story we would always clown him as a kid because every story he would start was like, "Man, back in Mississippi." And so to this day, I always go, "Man, back in Mississippi." Yeah.
My parents have a cat now called Mississippi.
Mississippi.
Uh huh.
Yeah. M I S S I P P I. That's how you guys would say it.
Uh-huh. That's true. That's exactly right.
So you acted in college too. Mm-hmm. Was theater your major?
Yeah.
Did you graduate with a theater degree?
Yes, I did.
Then how do you start? Is that why you moved to LA?
No, that is not why I moved to LA. I started, I got pretty disenchanted with acting like pretty fast.
Why?
Because I just realized it was all about, it was so, it seemed hopeless to me because it was just like a billion girls who looked like me and it was just who that person behind, you know, with the power liked that day.
Mm-hmm.
So it just felt disheartening and I was, you know, 22 or something and working in a restaurant with this dude who was 35 who was an actor.
In Mississippi?
No, this was in Chicago.
Oh.
And he was like just picked up the restaurant job on the all, you know, and I was just like, whoa.
This is what life's.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, bye. I'm out.
Right.
And so I randomly just started writing for like an alt weekly.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it all started.
Okay. So you graduate high school in Tennessee. Did you do good in high school? Were you like valedictorian?
Valedictorian.
Were you really?
Yes, I was.
Hey, congrats. I'll applaud to that.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah. And so did you get like an academic scholarship?
I did.
Fuck yeah. Hey, me too. I got to add an academic scholarship to University of Alaska Fairbanks. Holler. We're smart. Uh-huh. Kids, stay in school if you're listening.
That's right.
So you go to Mississippi and lived on campus or lived in apartments? What'd you do?
Apartment. Lived in a dorm and then I lived in apartments.
And how did you like the college experience? Did you live it up?
I loved it.
Were you drinking and partying and having a good time?
Yeah, but not till – so I was really good in high school.
Yeah.
And then I got to college and it was like
– I'm out here.
What's up, Boone's Farm?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first thing I got drunk on. And then I just – it was a wrap. Yeah. I was party girl of college.
Were you?
Yes, absolutely.
Did you like – was just like a lot of school spirit? Did you go to like football games?
No, hell no. Fuck that. Mm-mm.
Oh, wow.
I was like, not that girl.
Yeah.
No. I was in a sorority for like a year, and I was like, get me out of this thing.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, this is a prison.
I never could fuck with like the Greek system.
Oh my gosh,
no.
For
me. Yeah.
I turned really hardcore against it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, you know, I was on my theater swag, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like going to theater parties, everybody's smoking weed, drinking like bananas. We were playing rap, mm-hmm. you know? It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then... yeah, I was just like a huge party girl college.
Hope
my mom never hears this.
I'm going to email your mom.
I'll do it.
I'm going to tell her that you dressed up, though. I'm going to be like, look,
good.
She was talking all this shit, but she looked like a good Southern belle.
That's right.
So when you graduate from college, you move to Chicago to pursue the theater. Why Chicago? Why not L.A. or New York?
I don't know. I wanted to be different. I was just young and dumb.
Chicago, does it have a big theater scene? I mean, I know they have like an improv scene.
They've got a good improv scene. I was not good at improv, but shocking.
I went to my first improv show over the weekend with Romo.
Uh-huh. Dude, they love comedy.
No, Romo
Adam
loves
and
improv.
Romo.
Well, Adam and I go to stand up together all the time. And so Romo was like, you got to come to an improv show with me. And Adam and I are like stand up snobs.
Okay.
And I went to an improv show and it was so bad.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It was so bad.
Oh, man. There is nothing worse than bad theater.
So it felt like I was watching a bad acting class.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's rough.
So did you do like the Second City thing?
No.
No.
I never tried improv. Okay. I was just moving there and I was like, I'm going to act in plays.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anybody there. I just like was trying to be different. Oh, a bunch of my friends were in New York and I was like, no, I'm going to go to Chicago. I don't even know. I don't remember I should go back and read my journals and see where my head was at. Uh-huh. But it did not work out, needless to say.
How long did you make it there?
I was there a couple years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that your first time living through like real winters?
Yep.
And how was that?
Terrible.
Really?
Yeah. I know a lot of people love Chicago, but
it wasn't for you.
No, not for me.
Did you live in like the big city part or in one of the suburbs or something?
I lived in the big city part. Yeah. I didn't have a car. I loved taking the bus because I could read on the bus.
Did you have any support system out there? Did you know anyone in Chicago? You just moved out as a loner?
No, I didn't know anybody. Just moved.
Did you make any friends?
Yeah. I made friends.
You're a friendly person. I feel like I don't know why I'm saying like I told you were there, but I met you like as soon as you got out of the car in LA. I feel like you were just instantly already in the LA hip hop scene as soon as you got here and already making friends and just like intermingling with people. So
that was very fortunate.
Was it like that in Chicago or did it take you longer?
Not as much. People didn't fuck with me there.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Why?
I don't know. It was definitely, it was just like the city was like, you should leave.
Mm.
Like the minute I rolled in, they were like, go ahead and go back home.
Wow. No agent or anything? Did you get an agent?
Mm-mm.
How many like auditions did you go to for plays?
I don't even know. Maybe 5.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, so you fucking hated Chicago a lot.
I really didn't like it.
But you got a job at an alt weekly, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Writing about what?
Theater.
Writing about theater.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. And so you would go to plays for free?
Yeah.
And then just review them or what?
Yeah. I did that out here too.
Like
a lot.
I was going to get there because when I first saw that you got the job doing the theater reviews for LA for LA Weekly, right?
Yeah.
I went, that's weird. Why is she doing theater? She should be doing music.
Right.
She knows
so
much about music. Why is she doing theater? And now I'm putting the pieces together like, oh, yeah, like you were a theater major. That makes sense. I had no idea. I thought you were just like
trying to get in.
I thought you were just trying to get in wherever, basically. Right. I didn't realize that that was where your background was. Mm-hmm. How does it work when you first start writing for an alt weekly? Are they paying you by the piece or by the word? Is it like
by the piece?
And so is it like shit money or was it, or were you like, oh my God, they just paid me so much to do this?
No, I mean, I don't even know how much. What was it, $50 or something?
Wow.
For a review?
Yeah. And that's like really two nights work because you have to like spend one night watching the play and then another night writing the piece.
You got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's $25 a day. That's pretty shit.
Mm-hmm.
How did you live?
I was bartending.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was working in restaurants.
Right. Which
I love and I wish I could still do.
Why don't you?
I don't know. I don't know if I have time. LA's so competitive. They're like hiring like terrible servers and bartenders just because they're like pretty.
Yeah.
I like have real skills. Yeah. I mean, I never.
As a bartender?
I don't brag
server
on myself much, but right. I'm a great bartender.
I mean, I feel like if you could find like a. You got to find like a southern dive bar here that you would fit right in and kill it.
Man, I want to try to get on a Drawing Room.
Where's that at?
Over on Hillhurst.
Okay. I don't know.
It's a great dive bar. It's got a great jukebox.
Nice. I bartend warehouse parties because it's fucking easy fun money. And actually, probably like a quarter of these podcast episodes have directly been because I like met people at the parties.
Yeah.
I'm like, you gotta come do my show. And they're like, oh, all right. And then I give them free beers and then that works. How long was it till you moved from Chicago and where did you go?
I moved to Louisville, Kentucky because my boyfriend at the time was moving there to go to college. So I moved there and I bartended. And then in 2009, I got a fellowship with the NEA.
What's that?
It's the National Endowment for the Arts.
Okay.
Yeah. So I got a fellowship. I applied for it. And I came out here for a week.
What does a fellowship do? What is that? Like,
they just pay for you everything. So they fly you out here. They pay for, you know, your hotel, they pay for your meals, they pay for your entertainment, and you just do whatever it is that you got the fellowship for. In my case, it was writing about theater. So we came out here, we saw a bunch of shows, we heard, like, you know, critics talk.
What'd you see, Wicked? That's the only theater I know.
We saw some good stuff. Like, you know, went to the Geffen, like, Mark Taper Forum.
Came out with your boyfriend?
No, I got the fellowship by myself. So.
And so how did you even find out about the fellowship?
Somebody at the Alt Weekly told me about it. Maybe my editor had done it, and she was like, you should apply for this.
Yeah, and
so
it's a very formal application. Like, are there like a bunch of steps to go through, or is it pretty easy?
It's like college application, you know?
Yeah.
You got to send clips. You got to write a little essay. Uh-huh. You got to like, you know, get a couple. It was kind of hard.
Yeah.
Couple letters of recommendation. It wasn't just like, hey, here I am. Let
it wasn't
me tell
like
him.
Filling in your LinkedIn page.
Yeah, right.
Also, was that like the momentous occasion that changed your life and made you end up here?
Yeah.
Oh, so this
that
is like
it.
This is the catalyst moment. We're getting to the juice of the story.
That's it.
So you moved out here and you just came by yourself, but did you have people out here that like nobody?
Nope.
What did you do? Where'd you stay?
Well, I rented an apartment online.
Uh-huh.
So my little brother and my mom and I drove out. We stopped at Grand Canyon.
Oh.
And then we ended up... I got here, moved into my place, and then I started grad school at USC. So that was the...
Time out. So the fellowship was a week though, right?
Like 10 days.
But you flew out here by yourself for the fellowship.
Yeah.
And then did you have to write about stuff and give it back to the NEA?
Uh-huh.
So that was a success though.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you get back to Louisville and you're like, yo, boyfriend... I met my new boyfriend or what? Like, did you just leave him in Louisville?
Well, yeah. He had encouraged me, though. He was like, you should be doing writing. You shouldn't be bartending.
Right.
He was like, you should go to grad school. You should do it.
Right. Why does Kentucky feel like the South, but it's right next to Cincinnati, and Cincinnati feels like the Midwest?
So weird, right?
They're like a half hour away from each other.
Yeah, it's a weird place. It's like not really the Midwest, not really the South.
So you get back to Louisville and he's like, you should go to grad school. And
you should be a writer.
Had you already applied to grad school and got accepted to USC? Okay.
Yeah.
Why? And you picked USC just because you visited for a week or what?
No, I had applied to USC and NYU.
Okay.
And when I came out for the fellowship, I just knew. I was like, man, I never had considered L.A., but I was like, this is the place.
Really?
Yeah, I loved it. I just fell in love.
Right. And so mom and brother come meet you, mm-hmm. and you guys drive out. And then did you move in? Did you move, like, to that part of town by USC? Or
no.
Where'd you stay at?
Los Feliz.
Oh. So you're in the same place?
Yeah.
Oh, you're such a – what a natural hipster. Like, you just killed it.
That's why I hate all this gentrification.
Yeah.
I miss my old stuff.
Right.
I just miss my old stuff. I miss my Ralph's.
Yeah.
There used to be like a Chinese place and a Kentucky Fried Chicken and a Baskin Robbins, and now it's a 365 Whole Foods,
yeah.
and a Food Emoticons by Chloe and a Wells Fargo. It's so different, and I don't like it.
Well, shout out to Wells Fargo because they do handle my banking. and I do go to Ralph's, but today, before I went to the beach, I went to Ralph's, and I got like a turkey wrap, and I'm pretty sure that it fucked my stomach up.
Oh, no.
I don't know if it was the Ralph's or the Whole Foods that I ate at later.
oh, God, you equal opportunity them.
It was one or the other. Oh, both of those are like upper middle class. One is more like one is more upper. One's more just middle. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Sociologically speaking. And so, yeah, you get here in 09. And like, did you the way that I met you was through Marguerite, I think.
Yeah.
Was that like the first person you met out here or something? Or what was that?
No, I met her randomly. I can't even remember how we met, but it was pretty much like a bump into each other.
Yeah.
And maybe somebody said, oh,
you guys should know.
You know Marguerite? I was like, no. She was like, oh, Rebecca like loves rap. You guys should like talk.
Was it at a rap show or was it somewhere else?
It was just at USC.
Oh, like at USC. Campus. Oh, yeah. On campus.
Yeah, just randomly like bumping into each other.
Because really. Marguerite is someone that I would see all the time in LA filming every like rap show, every underground rap show. She was just there filming like some kind of documentary or another or like some kind of piece for somebody. Yep. It was just like a hired gun.
She's still Marguerite.
Right,
you know?
Right. And so you guys just clicked.
Mm-hmm.
And then did you – and then like how did you feel about the LA the rap scene when you got here?
I mean, I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I went to everything I could. School became totally secondary. I was like, what? It was so – I mean, you know what it was like at that time. Before Odd Future, before Kendrick, TDE – before YG, before everything that's kind of popping now.
Right.
All that wasn't here, you know? So right. I felt like it was a really fun time to be here.
Well, at that time, West LA's rap scene seemed to be really popping, and part of that was, like, Verbs, and part of that was, oh, God, I'm spacing on his name, DJ, Verbs DJ, homie that used to run the spliff, too. You know who he is. He's, like, a close friend of yours.
Val?
Yeah, Val the Vandal.
Yeah.
Val, I'm sorry. Shout out Val the Vandal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like those two were, like, really
yeah, they were like Book and Pack
Div. Yeah, they were mavens of the West Side scene. Mm-hmm. And so at the Spliff, you had this like really interesting mixture of like people coming from South LA and people coming from Westchester. Verbs used to refer to them as the smart black nerds or the cool black nerds, he would say. And so you would have like these fucking cliques from farther south coming up to the Spliff, and YG would be there sometimes, or like Ty Dolla Sign. Mm-hmm. And then you would have all the Westchester like jerker kids coming through. And then, Pack Div, you and I.
Yeah. You and I, huge then.
That was such a cool scene in like 09. Mm-hmm. It was so innocent looking back.
It really was.
Right. And you were just fucking with that? Did you love it or what?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. I like downloaded everything. I mean, back then it was, you know, wasn't like it is now.
Right.
So there were like, you know, what was that musical? There was a site called Digital Drift I used to go to and just like download anything.
Right.
Just to get my hands on like, you know. Everything those guys put out, of course.
Right.
Like Church League Champions, I still think Pac Div was great. They just, right. I don't know what happened, but
major
they
labels
their window.
Probably or something. I feel everybody gets tied up once they get signed, I feel like.
They were tight.
Yeah, Pac Div was great.
Yeah.
Nice fellas, too.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when Mayor came out that like it was going to be a real smash.
Yes.
Like that was a good, that was a big sounding song. But
yes, 100%.
When you say school became secondary, what do you mean? Like, did you stick with it? Did you get
I definitely stuck with it, but it was just like, I realized the important thing was to immerse myself, you know?
And was it more, what were you doing your grad school or like?
Journalism.
It was journalism.
Like arts journalism.
Okay.
Yeah.
For like MFA?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So yeah.
You don't have a PhD?
No, I do not have a doctorate. I would be making you call me Dr. Heathcote. if I did.
Which would be pretty sick. So you got your MFA. How long did it take? How long does that take?
It did. Well, I went to a program in like a year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just had to write my thesis and be.
And that's it. What did you write your thesis on?
Rap.
What was like the specific topic of
it? It was talking about the revival of like West Coast rap.
Really?
Yeah.
And who? What were the artists that you were talking about? Was it that?
All
that
those
scene?
Guys. That scene.
That's
yeah.
crazy. That's pretty tight.
Yeah.
Did I get mentioned in it?
Weird.
Since you did
yeah.
my bio? No.
I'm sure you did.
So dope. I want to read your thesis now.
The last scene of my thesis was, if I recall correctly,
yeah.
was about that night at the Roxy in 2010, August, when Kendrick performed.
Right.
And it was like earth-shattering to me.
Yeah.
And that was the time I was like, I'm going to write about that kid for LA Weekly. Yeah. I like barely wrote for LA Weekly, but I was right. like, I'm going to write about a profile on him.
It's so funny how small the LA scene is, because like, to put it in perspective or context for people, there was a time when NoCam went on tour with Merce one summer for like 20 dates or something, and the final LA show, James had been direct support the whole tour, right? And then for the LA show at House of Blues, he got bumped back a slot, and Kendrick was gonna, like Black mm-hmm. Hippie was gonna be main support or direct support, and I was like featured on two songs in James's set, so I was like, man, this is fucking bullshit. Like, who like, how come you're not direct support? Who are these people that Merce is putting on? Who like, who the fuck's heard of Kendrick Lamar and Absol and Schoolboy Q? Who are these people? And then I watched, and we're sitting back going like, look, none of these people, yeah. none of the crowd even knows the words to any of this shit. And that was in like 2009 probably, and then now here we are 7 years later, and they're like yeah. one of the biggest crews. But that's just like yeah. what LA was such a hater scene back then, or maybe it was just us. Maybe that's why we like faltered into obscurity. Who knows? But I always remember looking back at the show of like, oh yeah, we got bumped for Kendrick. That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Good problem to have.
Yeah.
How did you start getting linked up with LA Weekly?
During my fellowship, yeah. the theater critic there had. He and I had like connected, and so he was like, when you move to town, call me, we'll get a cup of coffee, you know, chat, whatever. Yeah. I didn't, but then the big top of the year 2010, we happened to see each other at the same play, and he was like, oh, would you be interested? He was like, what are you doing? I was talking to him, you know, about writing, whatever.
Yeah.
And then like a week later, he kept calling me, and he was like, hey, one of my critics fell out, could you go see a show tomorrow night for me? Uh-huh. And that's how that started.
And how long did you do theater reviews for them?
Man, like years.
Really?
Until 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no shit. But then did you start also covering music for them as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, 2000. Well, I started covering music in 2010.
Oh, at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like 6 months later.
Have you ever felt like, in hindsight, do you feel like you had a big break moment where you're like, oh, this is the moment? And probably even though in the grand scheme, nothing ever feels like a big break. Like
yeah.
it always feels like you're just still eating a normal life.
Yeah.
But did you ever have a moment where you're like, oh shit, mama, we made it?
The only time I felt like that yeah. was, I remember being super proud the first print feature I got for LA Weekly,
yeah.
which was end of 2010.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, end of 2010. It was on Currency, one of my favorites forever.
That was another one that I meant to say. Like, I remember when everybody mm-hmm. else was on one thing, you were on Currency, and I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah,
I loved Spitta.
Yeah.
And I had to chase him down to get that interview. Like, I got to sign the piece, and then next thing I know, I'm hitting up his manager, and the next thing you know, he's on a plane to Amsterdam.
Oh, shit.
And we all know about his appetite, so I was like, right. I'm never going to get this interview.
Right.
So that was, like, a hard one.
Well, how'd you get it?
I just called, and finally it was, like, I don't know, 4 a.m. for him.
In Amsterdam?
Yeah, and finally we got on the phone, and we talked, and he was, like, and it was funny because we talked for, like, an hour, and I was, like, well, okay, I guess I'll let you go, and he was, like, wanting to keep chatting. Because we were talking about the South and, like, you know, and it was great.
Yeah.
But I was just, he was like, we don't have to get off the phone. And I was just in my head thinking, this piece is due tomorrow. And it is really, I've got to make sure this thing is good.
Right.
So, yeah, it's funny.
But do you find that you have that experience with people a lot as far as, well, from my own personal experience, just talking to you, and even, I mean, I always talk on my podcast, but even now, like sometimes you'll finish a sentence and I'm like, oh, this she's inviting me to talk now. Like you're so good
That's
at getting,
good. I hope so.
You're so good at getting people to talk to you. Like, do you get a lot of artists going like, wow, this was so nice. You know?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think generally what people say to me is this felt like a conversation, not an interview.
Right.
Like it never felt like you were asking me questions. I felt like we were just talking.
That's what I always try to do with these. And I always think back to like the fucking journalism date from this Bright Spot. And I'm like, gotta take a page out of Rebecca Haythcote's book.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
You're doing it. This is great.
I try. This is one where I'm talking a lot more than usual probably, but that's okay.
That's probably me too, because I prefer for the other, you know.
I know. You're not used to being the one like spilling the beans at all.
Never.
Probably. When did you feel like you were starting to gain more – do you write more about music now than theater?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I haven't written about theater since – end of 2012.
When do you feel like you started gaining, or how do you feel like you started gaining more traction in the music world? Because now I see you popping up pretty much. You're like in every major music publication at this point, no? Like Fader, Pitchfork.
Yeah. I mean, of course, there's always
Billboard, Spin, yeah. Billboard.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm lucky.
Yeah, you're all over the place. Well, and I've told you this via text before, that it's like so cool to have seen your path along the way since I got to like, I was lucky enough to cross paths with you like right when you got to the city, and like, oh, she's like this gal that just has a passion for underground rap music, and now you're like, and then I was like, oh shit, she got the fucking YG Spin story. It was a Spin?
So I'm like,
it seems like in a sense your dreams seem to be coming true.
I mean, when you put it this way, I feel very fortunate,
right?
So thank you for
sometimes you gotta
me.
Like sit back and look at things in perspective.
You're right because when you're in the thick of it, sometimes you're just like, man, it's never, you know, you're just like constantly like thinking, when's it gonna happen,
right?
Or what's gonna happen? I need to get in this pub, I need to do this, or but
in your life, it's probably like it's constantly 2 a.m. and you've got a cup of coffee and you're trying to finish a fucking article and you're like, when's it going to not be this or something?
Yeah, but like, that's pretty true.
But like,
I'm a night writer.
But like, so that's success. You know what I mean? Like you're getting to live your dream, right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
All right.
Yeah.
That's good.
What a great reminder.
Yeah. I try to do that to people. Like I try to remind them like, hey,
you're
doing
like truth in them.
I do it really to project onto my – I go like, you got to remember, Lee, you don't have a fucking job. Like, you're doing all right.
Right.
I know it didn't work out for you in your head, but you're doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
yeah, you're doing. Right.
Right. What is the next big dream for you?
I've never been a big planner. Like, I never was one of those people who had, like, a 5-year plan or 10-year plan. I think this is probably what – as far as like being a journalist, a music journalist too, is what keeps me going, is that I'm always more interested in what's going to happen than what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always about like, you know, well, what about tomorrow? But I like not knowing, you know, because I could never have planned out what happened to me. I could never have planned out moving here and having success as a writing about rap music. Never dreamed that.
Right.
You know?
It seems like a lot of people just fall. When you fall into something, it almost seems to kind of
work. Yeah, I agree.
Right.
I've said that before. Like, you have these actors who slave away.
Yeah.
And then there's somebody who's like, I never really want to be an actor. And they're like, you know, Leo DiCaprio or something. Like.
Well, and even in this city, it seems to kind of, similar to your Chicago experience, a lot of people in L.A. seem to get chewed up and spit out by the city. And it seems to be the ones that come with the wrong intentions. If you come to L.A. and you go, man, I'm going to be an actor and I'm going to like live by the beach and learn to surf and fucking be California. And it's like, nah, man, the people that make it here from out of town or that actually stick around are the ones that just like, oops, I ended up in LA.
Yeah.
I never dreamed of living in it. I didn't mean to live here. And it's just like, now that I'm here, I fucking love it so much.
Yeah, same.
And I hear people that come and go like, oh yeah, I fucking hate LA. It's like douchey and there's too much traffic. And I'm like, you're just doing LA wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think if you move here and you just live, then you get it, you know?
Right.
And you meet, like, Angelenos are the chillest to me. I love Angelenos, like, natives. They're just usually so down to earth. they're so like, I mean, they love like lowrider. It reminds me of the South, honestly.
Right.
Like they're generally nice. They like lowriders and rap music.
That's such a huge misconception about Angelenos is like that they're rude, but they're not.
They're not.
Like
you're meeting people who moved here.
People mistake LA for Hollywood.
Totally.
And like Hollywood is the part of LA that Angelenos avoid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Like, why would you go? I mean, I went to Playhouse like 3 times my whole life.
Yeah.
And it's not the move.
I know. It's so unfortunate that you have that giant Playhouse tattoo now just from one drunken night.
It really is.
Do you have any big pieces coming up that you're excited about?
I can't think. I have a piece that I'm maybe going to do about home.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with music, but it's a crazy story.
Nice.
So if it gets told, if I can tell it,
right,
it will be a big deal to me.
So the reason that I have music journalists on the show every once in a while, other than the fact that like I the ones that I have on the show I like as people, is because I try to use this show to like let people know that there are ways to like make a living in music if you love music. And,
totally.
And you're an example of that. And so the last cliche question I'm going to ask you is like, if you had advice to give to an aspiring, whether it be an aspiring musician or an aspiring, just somebody who wants to live in the creative realm, but specifically someone that wants to like work in music journalism, what advice would you give to them?
You know, I think what I did is probably the way, I mean, that's how I would advise. I always tell people, get out from behind your computer. Just get out. Like, I would never have met anything that has happened to me would not have happened if I had just sat at home watching YouTube and digging for music. Like, I get that there are people where that's good, you know, that's their role and that's their lane and they stay in it and they like find cool shit on YouTube and new people, whatever. But none of this would have happened for me if I hadn't just gone out and gone to shows and been comfortable being alone. I think that's important. I think people get scared to do things by themselves. But I didn't know anybody.
Every
I just had to go to a show by myself.
Absolutely. Every fucking connection I've made in the city is from like going to a show alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Invariably you're going to talk to somebody.
Right.
And they're going to see that you're alone and be like, "Oh, well, what are you doing alone?" And the next thing you know, you find out they're a photographer. You find out they're a rapper. You find out they're whatever.
Right.
And the next thing you know, you have a connection.
Yeah.
And you're not doing that like cheesy, like, "Let's link," you know?
Right.
Never say my
Don't
life.
Ever be a "let's link" person. That's
never.
That's good advice. Don't ever be a "let's link" person.
Never.
Yeah.
Just make, just be open in yourself and get out, immerse yourself and the stuff. And if you love it, and you're – and then when you're ready, if you're ready, that's the other thing I would say. I always say yes. That has gotten me into a lot of trouble.
Lead with yes.
But I always say yes.
Yeah.
Because I would rather have the experience and regret it than not have the experience and regret not having it, you know?
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Have you always been so comfortable in your skin or did you have to learn it over time?
I had to learn it.
Yeah.
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 I'm way more comfortable now.
Than
I was. I was pretty comfortable as a teenager, but then... I had a period in my 20s when I was like, ugh.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like a real, a takeaway from a person like you is just like, you seem so genuine because you do really seem comfortable in your skin. And I think that's, that will also take you very far in whatever journey or destination you're trying to take in life. Just be comfortable with yourself, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. That's another thing.
Yeah.
You made me think.
Yeah.
I probably am a person who stands back a little and watches before I, just barrel in.
Right.
And I guess if that works for some people, it works for you. But I've always found it more, you don't have to like go in and like start telling everybody what you do.
Bang on your chest. Well, that's what I mean when I talk about the hubris of most music journalists these days. They walk in and go, "Oh, well, you're not familiar with this. Let me tell you about this culture that I fucking just learned about from Wikipedia."
That's not my style.
For sure. Well, Rebecca, I think we did it.
Thanks.
I think we did it.
That was awesome.
Good. I'm glad that you had fun.
Yeah, I had fun.
Where can the people find you online?
Well, my Twitter is really weird.
Why?
It's just the first initial of my name and R. Heathcote. I should probably change that.
It looks like Wraith Coat.
Like Wraith Coat. It does look like Wraith Coat.
It's R-H-A-I-T-T. I-T-H-C-O-A-T.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. I spelled it
wrong.
I
mean, if you look Rebecca Heathcote, you can find it.
Yeah, you can Google.
I'm the only Rebecca Heathcote.
Rebecca Heathcote and find her on Twitter. And then you can find, I mean, Tumblr. If you Google her, you'll be able to find so many articles that she has written, including like a recent favorite of mine is the Spin YG. So the YG article, that's a good one. And Still Brazy, amazing record. So go peep
so
that shit.
Good.
Yeah. Fuck Donald Trump. I just roll around listening to Fuck Donald Trump all the time. Not even my favorite song on the album. I just want everyone to know that, like, yeah, fuck Donald
That's
Trump.
That's what you do. Yeah. Mine is,
I wanted to get Kamaya on the show so bad when I first heard her tape. I love her tape.
Yeah, it's great.
And, like, she responded to a tweet. I'm like, yo, are you in LA? And she's like, yeah, what's up? And I, like, tweeted her. I'm like, I'm going to DM you. And then, like, the next week she was, like, signed to 400 and had the – and I heard, there was rumors of a Drake collab, and then that's what it was. You know, sometimes I just got to ask YG if he hit it. Already. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so follow Rebecca on Twitter at rhaithcote. Look for her articles. And thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to be your friend over the years. You are a delightful person.
7 years long.
So crazy. It's our 7-year anniversary.
It really is.
No, it's not. Wait,
well, not exactly.
I don't know when I don't know what month we met. Anyhow. Yeah, go follow her. And this is the part where it gets awkward because I'm going to like do all my social media stuff. So you can either take headphones on or you can leave me here. All right. So you can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man, Ben Shin, behind the boards, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, based with two S's. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat, youtube.com/kindaneat, where we just broke 15 million views. Thank you guys so much for tuning into all the videos. It's amazing. The last few that we've put up for some reason are really doing great. Tommy Genesis already hit 100K. K-Flay is on her way there. Anna Wise is on her way there. And Ghost Mane's video is already doing amazing too. So thank you guys for keeping the YouTube channel booming. We appreciate it. That being said, to help keep the lights on, because YouTube are a bunch of suckers and they don't pay like they used to pay, you can go to our Patreon account, patreon.com/kindaneat. And if you are a weekly viewer and this is part of your routine, then please just donate a couple bucks. Like, all right, you pledge like $1 an episode. The most episodes that we do per month is only 4. So the most money that you'll ever spend is $4 per month. I know all y'all motherfuckers got Netflix accounts and you probably don't pay for them because it's from your ex. So you might as well just like use that money that you pay for Netflix to just pledge to Kinda Neat, because we're broke, bruh. Just help us. I don't know why. There's no reason other than you should just be a nice person and do that. Don't forget to go to the podcast app. Download the podcast app. Search for Kinda Neat and subscribe. Leave a 5-star rating on there. And also tell us who you want to see on the show. I have been posting the podcast to YouTube nowadays. And on YouTube, you know motherfuckers are a bunch of haters. People are haters on YouTube and they just want to comment negativity. So if you're listening to the podcast on YouTube right now, leave a nice comment if you liked it. Don't tell me that I talk too much. I know that I talk too much. Don't tell people that I'm a fucking, somebody called me a cuck. Don't call me a cuck. Just like comment on there and say, hey man, thank you for what you do. I appreciate that shit. I rant. What else? That's it, I think. My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. This is my friend Rebecca Heathcote, who is a great writer, and you should go check her out. And this was Kinda Neat.
I love the ending rant.